The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KHUH-LP, 104.9 FM, Seattle, it is time for... The Thunderbolt! Hello, Olympia! Are you tired of getting your news and information from boring monotone drones? Would you prefer a little spice with your public affairs? Would you like to know what the Olympia activist community is up to? Well, now is your opportunity, because the Thunderbolt has come to chaos. Yes, kids, the Thunderbolt is your guide to all of the news that's fit to suppress. And I combined the feature pieces for two shows into one show this week, and it barely fits, so we're going to get right to it. Here we go. So I am very excited about the feature story for this holiday Thunderbolt, because I believe that I have finally discovered the perfect nutshell metaphor for capitalism. My example contains instances of nearly every major feature that so personifies capitalism, yet it is tiny. 8.1 square miles, in fact. A microcosm of capitalism, if you will. Like most aspects of capitalism, my example is hidden from view. It is, in fact, literally hidden on the most isolated island in the entire Pacific Ocean. However, I must hereby abjure, disclaim, warn, advise, exhort, and urge listeners to practice caution, vigilance, and circumspection, for I am about to strip capitalism bare, and in doing so, I will be exposing its diseased private parts to public view, and it is very ugly. If I may coin a phrase, believe me. Yes, kids, this week the Thunderbolt takes listeners to the Pacific Island nation of Nauru. As mentioned, Nauru is only just over 8 square miles. Or about the third the size of Manhattan Island. In 2011, the population of Nauru stood at 10,084 people. Nauru is separated by many hundreds of miles of ocean from any other landmass of any kind, and by thousands of miles of ocean from any significant landmass of any kind. Nauru is, in fact, literally as far from anywhere else as it is possible to be, whilst yet remaining anywhere at all on the entire planet. Few people have ever heard of Nauru, much less been there. And these days, Reporters or visitors of any kind are strongly discouraged. A journalist named Jack Hitt, H-I-T-T, collected most of the information that I am about to share with you. And he collected most of it back in 2003. So Mr. Hitt flew from Brisbane to Nauru on Nauru Airlines only jet. Upon arrival, Mr. Hitt flagged a ride in Nauru's only taxi before checking into Nauru's only hotel. And that single jet represents Nauru's only physical contact with the outside world. During his flight, Mr. Hitt had been told that he was lucky to be on board, since the president of Nauru often commandeered Nauru Airlines' single jet to fly in supplies for his lavish parties. In addition, on more than one occasion, creditors had attempted to seize Nauru Airlines' single jet right there on the Australian runway, trying to collect on one of Nauru's many debts. And in December of 2005, Nauru's single jet was indeed repossessed, and normal air service was not resumed until after the aircraft was replaced in June of 2006. Upon boarding, Mr. Hitt noted that half of the plane was taken up with giant plastic containers customized to fit ceiling to floor in the passenger seats. These were necessary because Nauru must import everything that they consume, except for what they can catch on their roofs. Nauruans must even import all of their fresh water. So there is a reason why Nauru is so broke, and there is a reason why Nauru must import everything. And Mr. Hitt saw this reason on that very first taxi ride. But in order to explain what Mr. Hitt saw on this taxi ride, you will first need some context. The first humans arrived on Nauru some 2,500 years ago. And their descendants sustainably lived there during the intervening millennia without much outside interference. There are no mosquitoes, and there was no disease on Nauru. The climate is temperate year-round, so there is not even any need to wear clothes. The Nauruans farmed the verdant land, and they fished the teeming shore. They hunted the abundant birds and terns. There was an abundance of fresh fruit. There was an abundance of fresh water. Nauru was just the kind of nirvana that everyone imagines when they hear the words Pacific Paradise. Now, Nauru is a coral atoll, and it has been there for around a million years. Since Nauru is the only landmass for hundreds of miles around, migrating birds were very fond of Nauru right from the beginning. Lots of birds for lots of millennia. Now, lots of birds hanging out for lots of millennia means lots of bird poop. And it turns out that megatons of bird poop represents not only the physical reality of Nauru, But megatons of bird poop also provides the perfect metaphorical allusion to what those megatons of bird poop eventually did to Nauru. Now, as you may or may not know, if you take megatons of bird poop and bake it in an equatorial sun before composting it beneath a tropical forest, in about a million years or so, you will end up with an organic fertilizer that is very valuable to farmers. Say by about 1896, when a man named Henry Denson picked up a piece of petrified wood. Mr. Denson took his petrified wood back to Sydney, Australia, where he used it as a doorstop at his place of employment for 3 years. Until a colleague named Albert Ellis tested Mr. Denson's petrified wood and discovered that actually it was the richest phosphate ore that anyone had ever assayed. And thus was Nauru's fate sealed. But back to Mr. Hit now. You may ask, why would a journalist travel to such an isolated and unknown Pacific island? Well, Mr. Hit was trying to find out what had happened to all of Russia's money in the late 90s. Tens of billions of dollars worth of Russian cash had seemingly vanished into thin air, and the Russian Central Bank claimed to have no idea where it had all gone. However, upon interviewing an official of the Russian Central Bank, Mr. Hit learned that actually they did know where all of that Russian money had gone. The official said one word. He said, "Nauru." Mr. Hit asked, "Who is Nauru?" So it turned out that when they debriefed Mr. Hit, the CIA and the Treasury Department were both very interested to learn of this, as they also had no idea where all of Russia's money had gone. So Mr. Hit decided to visit Nauru himself to see this bank that had evidently liquidated one of the world's greatest superpowers. And it turned out that this bank that had the CIA, the Treasury Department, and the Russian Central Bank in such total tizzies, this bank rests in a broken down shack that contains two rooms. There is no sign nor any other way to identify the bank.
My name is Miss Nelson.
My name is Bruce.
And we've made a wild and wonderful record for you.
We will tell you all kinds of things to do and be, and you can let your imagination go with us.
Just listen to what we say, dear heart.
This is where the magic starts.
In addition to no sign to identify this bank, there is no lobby. This bank has no offices or desks. There are no teller windows, for there are no tellers. Nor are there, in fact, any employees of any kind, except the cleaning lady.
Agent. Peacefully without
noted, rather than any normal bank paraphernalia, the two rooms were instead crammed wall to wall with banks of computers, interspersed with banks of air conditioners to keep the computers cool in the tropical heat.
All the people in the world, only one.
Mr. Hitt was forced to discern all of these facts from the open door, though, since he was denied entrance into the bank. When Mr. Hitt knocked, the aforementioned cleaning lady, an elderly, now ruined woman with a broom, answered his knock. Mr. Hitt asked to speak with someone from the bank. The cleaning lady informed Mr. Hitt that there was no one there and that there would never be anyone there. And then she closed the door in his face. And thus, Mr. Hitt came as close as anyone has ever gotten to the red-hot center of the great global economic secret. Mr. Hitt had met the cleaning lady of the new global economy. Ha ha ha. Now, most banks are required by law to keep an audit trail of money coming in and going out. Now, Nauruan banks don't need to bother with such nonsense. Nor does Nauru require that anyone ever tell anyone else who actually runs the bank, nor is there any requirement to provide any information about anyone that is doing business with that bank. Thus, when investigators track dirty money to a Nauruan bank, then poof, it magically disappears without a trace. Yes, kids, Nauru became the libertarians' dream come true. Welcome to the truly free market. The only thing forbidden on Nauru is disclosure. Now, providing clandestine banking services was not the only source of income for Nauru during those days. In 2001, in 2002, several suspected terrorists were arrested carrying Nauruan passports, which it turned out could be obtained at a fire sale price of $15,000 to $30,000. The government of Nauru produced a play in London. Maybe you missed the musical based upon the amorous adventures of Leonardo da Vinci. It was called Leonardo, A Portrait of Love. It closed after a few weeks, and the government of Nauru ended up losing tens of millions. In 2009, Nauru became the fourth country, after Russia, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, to recognize Abkhazia, a breakaway republic of Georgia. It is believed that Russia provided Nauru with $50 million in humanitarian aid in return. Nauru is paid by the Australian government to house a bunch of refugees that the Australians are legally responsible for, but don't want to deal with. So instead, they pay Nauru many millions every year to house them out of sight, out of mind, in concentration camp-type conditions. For several years, The only thing heard from these refugees were occasional reports of slave-like conditions and widespread systemic sexual abuse of women and especially of children. There were numerous credible reports of children self-mutilating, including one instance of a 12-year-old girl sewing her own mouth shut, and numerous credible reports of suicide attempts amongst children as young as 8 years. Since the refugees arrived on Nauru, foreigners have been denied access to them. Eventually, the borders were closed. Tourists and journalists were no longer allowed. The refugees cannot receive visitors. Australia has since plucked other desperate refugees who were fleeing impossible conditions out of the water and have sent them to Nauru as well and to other camps they opened up on other isolated islands. The Nauruan refugees are not permitted to mingle with the native Nauruans. They don't work. The children are not schooled. They have nothing to do but sit all day in their concentration camps. And they are daily subject to systemic physical and sexual abuse. And this brings us, loyal listeners, to the heart of Nauru's matter. We finally get to the meat on the bone. We are ready to expose the crux of the biscuit. What did it say? A sop to you Frank Zappa fans there. For underlying everything else are Nauru's bird poop mines. So Nauru became an independent nation in 1968 and took control of their phosphate mines. And the money poured in. Thanks to their mines, by the late 80s, Nauru was per capita the richest country on the planet. Everyone bought a car. Even though a drive around the entire perimeter of the nation doesn't last much more than 30 minutes. Schools and hospitals sprung up. They built cinder block houses. The hotel went up. Western food, along with extreme obesity and diabetes, arrived. Everyone got satellite TV. Nauru Airlines took off. In addition, a trust fund was begun to finance Nauru's future for when the bird poop ran out. And this fund eventually reached $1.3 billion with a B dollars. And in the final sign of true post-colonial coming of age, they built a golf course way out in the middle of nowhere. Yes, kids, this was capitalism's dream come true. The Nauruans had been lifted from savagery and were now fully civilized. They had been lifted from their darkness into the light of mass consumption. They developed a lifestyle to which they very quickly became accustomed. So why must Nauru, this rich tropical paradise, now import everything that they consume? Why must Nauruan officials now go to such extraordinary lengths to fund their lifestyle to which they have become accustomed? Well, just as with everyone else, in the 90s, their bubble burst. In addition, Nauru's financial advisors in the West robbed them blind. One of them alone looted the Nauruan treasury for over $60 million. Most of Nauru's recent woes, though, has sprung up from their subsequent get-rich-quick schemes. In addition to the disastrous production of their play in London, there were also several disastrous real estate investments. And even more problematic, the fallout from the passport operations consisted of Nauru ending up on the American shortlist of nations aiding and abetting terrorism. And so Washington laid down the law. Shape up or face stiff sanctions. So why, after experiencing such incredible riches, did Nauru end up engaging in all of these desperate attempts at producing cash? Why must a formerly self-sufficient island paradise import everything they eat and everything they drink, including even their water? What happened to all those fish and all of that fruit, and where did all the money from the bird poop mines go? Well, it's time for a quick station break, so we'll be back in just a minute to tell you all about it. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. We have some unfinished Thunderbolt business for the December 16th show. I aired a piece called Capitalism Gone Wild, wherein I provided a Pacific Island nation called Nauru as the perfect nutshell metaphor for capitalism. I described how this tiny nation of just over 8 square miles is as isolated from the rest of the world as any place else is on the whole planet. I described how Nauru used to be a Pacific Island paradise with an abundance of fruit, water, fish, and fowl. I described how Nauru has a mild year-round temperate climate, and you don't even need to wear clothes. And most importantly, I described how Nauru sat atop the richest phosphate deposits ever discovered, and how as a result of their phosphate mines, the Nauruans became, per capita, the richest people on Earth. Then, I described how the Nauruan economy eventually collapsed, and how these days, Nauru is forced to engage in a wide variety of truly extraordinary efforts in order to fund their nation. I described how these days Nauru must import everything that they consume, even their fresh water. However, just as we reached the climax of that show, and just as I was about to describe what happened to Nauru's riches, and why a fecund Pacific Island must now import everything that they eat, drink, or wear, I left listeners hanging. I informed you that if you wanted to know what had happened to Nauru, then you had to tune in to this week's show. So I would like to say that this was the result of virtuosity and strategic planning on my part. After all, leaving your audience hanging right at the critical point so that they will tune in to your next program is a strategy as old as the hills. But frankly, this happened only because capitalism gone wild turned out to be a much longer piece than I had originally anticipated, and I could not fit all of it into the December 16th show. And so now, finally, we come to the blockbuster conclusion in this epic tale of tragedy and woe. During that December 16th show, I described my source for this story, a reporter named Jack Hitt, who arrived in Nauru in 2005. I told you that upon his arrival in Nauru, Mr. Hitt caught a taxi, and that during that taxi ride, Mr. Hitt saw firsthand exactly why, after such a meteoric rise to such atmospheric heights, Nauru is now so broke. And he saw precisely why Nauru must now import everything. And so now, finally, the Thunderbolt will describe exactly what Jack Hitt saw on his taxi ride. So at first, they stuck to the shoreline, and Mr. Hitt saw all of the normal things that you normally see in any idyllic Pacific Island paradise. He saw palm trees. He saw abundant flora and fauna. He saw white beaches being gently lapped by warm and gentle azure seas, and so forth. Then, Mr. Hitt indicated to the taxi driver that he wanted to go topside, or into the elevated interior of the island. He noted that the taxi driver's mood immediately darkened upon learning of this. But the driver reluctantly complied, and he turned into one of the few side roads that lead up onto what is called the top side. And what Mr. Hitt saw in the topside, he describes as one of the scariest things I have ever seen. For you see, here is the thing about Nauru. The entire island has been strip mined right down to its coral skeleton. There is nothing left of Nauru's lush paradise except a narrow scrim along the shoreline. I will allow Mr. Hitt to describe it in his own words. Quote, It is a haunting landscape of dugouts, stone channels formed by limestone towers, and coral outcroppings, all blindingly white under an intense equatorial sun. The winding channels amongst these coral spires are lined with appallingly silky dirt and old filthy trash that is too expensive to export from the island. And it blows all around this blistering desert. Shreds of plastic bags snag on bits of coral, and feral dogs hunt in the canals. The taxi driver told me how that when he was a boy, all of this was dense tropical forest. It is impossible to walk topside. The exposed coral skeletons will shred either your shoes or your bare feet if you try. And nothing grows there, except in isolated patches where there is still a little bit of soil that wasn't carted away. The pure white landscape baking under the equatorial sun, mixed with the thick dust, is stifling and nearly unbreathable, and the canyons effectively block all breezes from the sea. And now, rising sea levels are about to eliminate their narrow little strip of coast. Yes, after thousands of years of the good life, the now ruins sold their paradise for 30 pieces of Western silver. Now their paradise is lost. Their 30 pieces of silver are gone. And there is quite literally nowhere else left for them to go. Nauru has an unemployment rate of 90%. Of the 10% that are employed, 95% of them are employed by the government. The value of the trust fund that was supposed to finance Nauru's future has shrunk from $1.3 billion with a B in 91 to $138 million with an M in 2002. And ironically, while Nauru's fake banks were thriving, the National Bank of Nauru was going insolvent. Tourists have no interest in an island that has been strip mined, and divers have no interest in coral reefs that have been killed by mining runoff. Yes, kids, welcome to Nauru. Capitalist world in microcosm. And as for Nauru's future, at the end of his visit to Nauru, Jack Hitt interviewed the president of Nauru, Bernard Dowiyogo, D-O-W-I-Y-O-G-O. They had breakfast together. Mr. Hitt asked President Dowiyogo what new economic development plans the president had for Nauru. The the president replied that since all of the phosphate would soon be gone, he was considering some new ideas. President Doriogo said that he was looking into a new technology that would allow them to cut the limestone pentacles now exposed in Nauru's interior into flat slabs, whereupon the now ruins would polish these slabs and sell them as ancient coral coffee tables in the United States. Well, that sounds good enough. But Mr. Hitt then asked President Doriogo what other ideas he had. President Doriogo just stared at Mr. Hitt blankly and then took a bite of toast. It's time to get to work. But first, we're going to fill out the rest of the hour with some music. Let's go with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. We'll be right back.
There's a tardy hearse with a body in the back, and the mourners are standing in the pouring rain. I'll make you a bet, I'll get you 10. That boy won't beat that light on main. With a body in the back and the mortars are standing in the pouring rain. I'll make you a bedside, I'll get you 10. That boy won't beat that light all day. There's a cranky priest checking his watch, got a couple more to preach today. And the winner in the street just stepping her feet, shouting's a winner on the say.
I know your folks, your daddy went to school with mine. I seem to recollect he died in 89.
Anyway, here it comes, took a ride on fence from all the signs. He should behave, it makes you think he might kill more, try to get that body to the grave.
Said he didn't care, we could bury him there in the hills with a shovel and a prayer. Tune up all your rusty strings, let every Christian sing. I'm gonna dance when I go to meet my king. That brought tears to her eyes, she said it wasn't civilized. Man should stick around even when he dies. I'd rather bury you in town and see your body lower down with a wooden marker sticking in the ground.
With a body in the back, and the warders are shouting and cheering and lawn. A feller could make a tidy haul, that boy don't make it to the lawn. The man in black must be his boss, I bet that there'll be hell to pay. Driver in the hearse with a body in the back, won't live to drive another day.
He got a body back across the county line. 10 minutes flat, I wonder if he'll beat that time.
Get your shovels out, dig another hole, we got another one to plant today. For the driver in the hearse with a body in the back, just hit that winner in the way.
That was the Tardy Hearse from the Pine Box Boys. Before that, we had the Yeehaw Factor from Bela Fleck. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.